Welcome to the Profit Business Cast, Canada's podcast for innovative entrepreneurs and executives. And brought to you by Bennett Gold LLP Chartered Accountants. Here is your host, Robert Gold.
Once again, from high atop the Business Cast Podcast Center in Toronto, live and in the morning. We're way off to the east. I can see Blow Me Down, Newfoundland. I'm Robert Gold, Managing Partner of Bennett Gold LLP, Chartered Accountants in Toronto. And this podcast is produced in partnership with Profit Magazine and ProfitGuide.com. I'm excited. We are really, really privileged to have Bill Robson with us. Bill is the President and CEO, C.D. Howe Institute. Bill, welcome to the Profit Business Cast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
This is going to be really exciting for me, Bill. I know you from various places that we've been together and work that we've done together, but what I'm really interested in, what I want to break into a little bit here, is I want to talk about the business of the C.D. Howe Institute, one of the best think tanks in the world, especially within Canada, and then I want to talk about some of the things that you're doing that affect our listeners across the country. So cdhowe.org, the C.D. Howe Institute. Tell us first a little bit about yourself and the work of the Institute.
Unusually, among organizations that you profile, we are a not-for-profit. We're a charity that does economic policy work. So anything that's got an economic angle to it, and it could be in the way that we analyze it, certainly it would be in the impact that it has on people's living standards in Canada. Anything that's got that would be fair game for us. So you'll see us active around the time, especially of the federal and provincial budgets. We keep an eye on what the Bank of Canada does with monetary policy. When there are international events going on, once upon a time free trade with the United States, more recently with Europe. Those are all fair game for us. Hot topics recently have included pensions policy and financial regulation have been hot over the last 5 years. These are all areas that are subjects of C.D. Howe Institute work, and we hope that we're credible with business people, with deputy ministers, with the policymakers in Ottawa and the provincial capitals. And when we are, we look to have a positive impact on Canada's business environment and Canadian prosperity over time.
And Bill, what about yourself? What brought you to the C.D. Howe Institute?
I sometimes say, and it's not entirely flippant, I was working at an investment dealer, not looking to leave, but I heard about the opening here at the C.D. Howe Institute, and I thought to myself, this is too good to be true. Here I am complaining about the government for free, and somebody's offering me a salary to do it. I came over. I liked the look of the place. It had a good reputation then for credible, high-quality work. It had the ear of policymakers. They didn't always like what it said, but they always paid attention. So I decided to throw my lot in with theirs, started off doing a lot of work on fiscal and monetary policy, and all these years later, I'm still there, encouraged by the fact that once in a while, you do have some positive impact, and that keeps you in the game.
So, Bill, let's take a look at the business of running the C.D. Howe Institute. As you said, it's a not-for-profit. Two things come to my mind, and the first is you need to manage the brand and the reputation, yet you've got a consistent reputation for putting out high-quality work. How do we maintain that level?
The devotion to high quality is something that people would understand from a variety of walks of life. In our line of work, it's really a matter of ensuring that any research product that you put out has gone through the appropriate level of scrutiny. For academics, this would be a familiar thing, too, if you think of the way journal articles get reviewed. You're putting anything that you're considering publishing out to a wide range of reviewers. It could be academics who are experts in the area. It could be business people who know the industry. It could be the policymakers that are dealing with it. And through that process, you're going to catch mistakes, you're going to catch analytical problems, and importantly, in our case too, you're going to have discussions that help to shape the thing so that it's relevant to the person who's grappling with the problem. It's not unusual for academic economists to have some insights about how the economy works, but it's a big step to go from some of those insights to practical advice that a policymaker who's actually thinking about a tax change or maybe a change in, say, the employment insurance program or the immigration program, turning it into something that's going to be practical to them. And we're very focused on ensuring that the work is seen to be high quality, not just by the academics, but by the policymakers. And when you do that, one of the beneficial effects is that people start coming to you. So, for example, with the exception of Mark Carney, who's off doing his job in the UK, every living former governor of the Bank of Canada is associated with us as a senior fellow. And those people, they're attracted by the quality, and they certainly encourage you to keep it up to the mark.
Bill, I know, or I've always thought of
think tanks as quiet, studious places until I met you and until I started getting involved in the C.D. Howe Institute. Now I think it is a place of massive activity. I just wonder, how is it that you can keep such a great inventory of hot topics and get them out the door on such a timely basis?
I'll start with something that, again, would be a familiar theme to many of your listeners from many lines of work, and that is with the quality of the team. On the research side, we've got a group here of people that are very motivated by the mission of the organization to make a positive difference, to get good quality work out there that makes constructive contributions to economic policy. And they all know that in order to do that, you do need to ensure that you've got a good pipeline of ideas, because you're going to put things through that review process I talked about, and not everything will survive. And the other thing that's important is that at times there's an element of a throw of the dice at a given week when you put a paper out. If there's major news on something entirely different, you may find that you're just not getting the attention that you wanted initially. One of the tricks of the business is simply to ensure that you've got a good, steady pipeline of releases out there. And once in a while, we had an interesting example not long ago where we had some recommendations for changes to the temporary foreign workers program. It was very hot in the news. The minister announced a change the next day. If you are active enough that you're out there with advice regularly, the adage that fortune favors the prepared mind, the chances are that you'll have something that's relevant and ready to go right when it's hot are much higher.
Well, I love that. I got to write that down. Fortune favors the prepared mind. So let's talk about the prepared minds, Bill, of Canadian business owners. And what would you say the effect has been of the work of the C.D. Howe Institute on Canada's business owners and entrepreneurs over, let's say, the last 20 years?
In some of the very important framework policies that are now part of the landscape in Canada, we're at one point topics of hot debate. For example, free trade with the United States is now something that we've lived with for a long time, and we've seen some important positive developments in the economy as a result of that trade agreement. But back in the late 1980s, there was a federal election fought over it, and many people were worried about some bad effects it would have. Economists generally tend to be favorable towards open borders as opposed to protectionism, and the C.D. Howe Institute did publish a number of papers that were influential at the time. Similarly, we have low and stable inflation. The Bank of Canada has been targeting and pretty much reliably hitting 2% inflation since the mid-1990s. Once again, if you cast your mind back, what now seems like a part of the landscape that people have come to count on and factor into their business decisions was back in the late 80s and early 90s. Some people didn't think low inflation was possible. Others thought it wasn't desirable. And people who remember the 1970s and 1980s will remember the difficulty of planning a business when price increases could be double digits some years and when interest rates tended to swing around as wildly as they did back in those days. Another area that I think has made quite a difference is the effort that we put into looking at business tax rates, not just business tax rates alone, individual as well, and consumption taxes, but particularly the high corporate income tax rates that we used to see both federally and provincially. We put out a series of publications that pointed out just how damaging that way of levying taxes is. It's a very expensive way, if you like, of paying for your government programs because of the discouraging effects that it has on businesses investment. So that's another area where over time policymakers started to pay attention to the economic analysis and decided that you could run a much more prosperous country and in fact raise about the same amount of revenue with a lower corporate income tax rate as with a higher one. So those are three of the things I would highlight.
So Bill, you mentioned pensions, and in the province of Ontario now, this Made in Ontario pension plan is a really hot topic. I'm curious as to what other topics your team's looking at right now that are the hot topics.
The pensions one is one that's been a topic for us for quite a while. In fact, one of my own projects back in the 90s was on the Canada Pension Plan. Once upon a time, it was a pay-as-you-go program that was headed for the rocks because the demographics had turned quite unfavorable. And looking at the Ontario Pension Plan, I have some concern that the political incentives there are to promise big payouts a little earlier than the contributions into the plan would warrant. And we don't want to see anything put in place that's going to turn into that kind of ripoff of the younger generation. There's been a bit too much of that over the last little while. And that came to mind partly because one of the hot topics that we have been turning our minds increasingly to is healthcare. And the natural focus for an economically oriented institute, and I think a lot of Canadians now have started to keep an eye on this and to worry about it themselves, is the impact of demographic change and some cost increases that we see in our publicly funded system. As the population gets older, we now see that the healthcare budget of many provinces are getting to be about half of their spending. And as the population gets older and we get into the age when more of us are requiring health services, there's a lot of upward pressure on that number. So there are a variety of ways that you can respond to that, and drawing on the pensions analogy, to the extent that we actually don't want to be cutting back on the services that are available. We want efficiencies, but at some point you don't want to be choking things off just when people need them. So maybe it makes sense to pre-fund healthcare a little bit the way we do with pensions before people need the services, get a little bit of extra money set aside. And then when we are older and wanting those services, long-term care, some of the drug programs that people tend to rely on more as they get older, there will be some money in the kitty to pay for it rather than just turning to young people to cover that. So those sorts of demographically driven changes are very much on people's minds nowadays. And I think that's going to be an important area for us to explore for many years to come.
Now, I want to ask you a sideways question to this, and it pertains with something that just was announced today in the United States. Starbucks is partnering with an online university, and they're going to be offering free tuition to any number of their employees, any of their baristas that choose to take them up on it. There's a couple of conditions, of course, but effectively, it's employer-funded post-secondary tuition. Do you feel there's an opportunity for that in Canada?
I think that there's going to be a lot of attention to issues connected with human capital generally. Some of that is relatively well covered off in Canada. We've got a pretty well-performing elementary and secondary school system, though you do always need to keep an eye on that and make sure that it is performing up to the mark. We've got a lot of enrollment in post-secondary education right through from when people are in their 20s to when they're in their 50s and 60s and maybe even beyond, is making sure that people have that ongoing opportunity to build their skills, build their knowledge, keep themselves fresh and branch out.
You know, Bill, we often talk about the innovation culture. We've got some great tech innovation in Canada. But is the innovation culture in Canada a myth or is it real?
I think it's real. The problem that Canadians have is that we often benchmark ourselves against the United States, and the United States is a hotbed of innovation, such as pretty rare on the planet to find a country that's got that many really vibrant innovation clusters, whether it's in high tech or biomedical and so on. Canada doesn't quite measure up to that standard, but I think the innovation culture in Canada is quite strong. Sometimes people are discouraged that we don't see better productivity numbers. Low productivity growth is a constant lament. But I take some of that evidence with a bit of skepticism simply because we now have an economy that's about 80% services. And as opposed to the assembly line or anything that you can measure in sort of a pounds per dollar in, like steel industry or something fairly basic like making white t-shirts, when you're producing a lot of high-end services, could be financial services, could be the services that Bennett Gold provides, could be engineering, some of the things that Canada exports, it's very difficult to measure just how big the quantity increases are there and control for some of the price changes to get a good productivity measure out. When I look at the living standards across a lot of Canada, it seems to me that we're not doing that badly. We can always do better. You always want to make sure that your workforce is attuned to a technological innovation, that they're accepting of it, that they're enthusiastic about it. Even here in the quiet think tanking world, we try to make sure that we're taking advantage of the new opportunities that come our way. So I think it's good for Canada to hold itself to a higher standard. Being next to the United States, you want to take that as an example that you could always do a little better. I don't think we should be discouraged about ourselves, though, when people who operate around the world in multinational companies are asked, how does Canada compare as a place to do business? They rate it pretty highly, and one of the reasons they rate it highly is because of the quality, the intelligence of the workforce.
Well, finally, Bill, I know for a fact that many of our listeners across the country really don't put a lot of mind to public economic and social policy, and yet I know that you know things. You're almost a soothsayer. So having said that, are there three things from the Institute's recent research that you can share with our entrepreneurs and listeners across the country that will help them focus their mind to the things in those areas that will directly affect them?
There are a number of trends that do bear watching, and I think that people are already paying attention to some of them. We've talked a little bit about demographics. One of the things that I think is worth underlining, and again, it won't be news to many people, but I think the extent of the change is going to take people by surprise, is the continuing openness of the Canadian economy and the efforts that we're making to improve our access to Asian markets and also the access that Asian producers will have to us. There's the Trans-Pacific Partnership that I think think is going to make a very big difference to the Canadian economic landscape. It's going to open up some sectors to competition that previously were rather closed, and it certainly is going to offer very new market opportunities to Canada. The other thing that I guess I would underline is back on the topic of demography, but thinking a little bit more about the quality of the people that are looking to come and work and live in Canada. I'm very struck, once upon a time, economists would have talked about natural resources as the factor that doesn't move, and people and capital and so on will tend to migrate where the natural resources are. That's certainly true, and it's important for part of the Canadian economy, but the other thing in Canada that's very noticeable is that we've attracted a lot of talent. We have some hubs. Toronto is one, Vancouver, Montreal, the Kitchener-Waterloo area is another one that's justifiably famous, where you've seen talented people from all over the world who've decided to come to Canada, and talent attracts talent. It's very interesting to talk to people who have come to Canada, ask them why are they here, and often the answer you'll get is, I'm here because the people that I want to work with, whether it's in technology, whether it's in finance, whether it's the services they provide, this is where they all want to live. And so increasingly, I think Canada is a magnet for talent. We have a great brand in the world. People do want to come here, and that's a success that feeds on itself. I think that Canada is going to continue to be one of the world's most favored places to live, to work, to raise a family, and to grow your business. And I think that's a very positive thing, and it certainly affects every entrepreneur, every business person's outlook.
And it's a positive way to continue and to finish the interview. Bill Robson, President and CEO, C.D. Howe Institute, C.D. Howe, H-O-W-E, cdhowe.org. Bill, thanks for being a guest on the Profit Business Cast.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
And until next time, I'm Robert Gold, Managing Partner of Bennett Gold LLP, Chartered Accountants in Toronto. You heard it from Bill. Fortune favors the prepared mind. Be prepared. Give us a shout at bennettgold.ca. You can find other great episodes of the Profit Business Cast at profitguide.com. See you next time in the morning, everyone, and good night. Blow me down, Newfoundland.
You've been listening to the Profit Business Cast, Canada's business podcast, and brought to you by Bennett Gold LLP, Chartered Accountants. From acceleration to succession, strategy to tax planning, there's a lot more through the door at bennettgold.ca.